Hello and welcome back to Security Insights, the podcast that takes a deeper look at today's most important issues in cybersecurity and beyond. I'm Stephen Pritchard. Do we still need to worry about security in the cloud? Or put another way, is cloud security now good enough? In the early days of cloud computing, there were very real concerns about data security and privacy. But cloud providers have invested heavily in security measures. After all, it's in their financial interest to do so. And the hyperscalers are, of course, very well placed to do this. They can buy the best technology and hire the best people. Does that mean that by moving to the cloud, security is taken care of? Unfortunately, it doesn't. Today's guest is Jennifer Cox, who's part of the global engineering team at Tenable and Director for Ireland of Women in Security. The problem is that the cloud can be secure, but it's not secure out of the box, she argues. Compromised identities are one of the biggest risks. And, she warns, failures happen when we assume that someone else has taken care of it.
It always makes me a bit nervous when people think that something is foolproof, and that's the kind of sentimentality that's coming from that. And I hear it a lot. Like, it's not wrong what you're saying. I definitely hear it a lot. But I think what concerns me about it is that as soon as we start believing that somebody else is going to look after our security needs and do it in its entirety, then we have a problem. I talk about that from both a human perspective and then from a company level perspective too. So with cloud security, yes, the security is better in all of those platforms. Yes, there's better means and they've made it better for people to be able to manage security in those platforms. But ultimately, there's a lot of blind spots for people that are putting their data and putting their systems onto cloud platforms because they don't always understand how much of that responsibility actually lies with them. And at the end of the day, you know, I can get somebody to come to my house and put a really great, super technical lock on my front door. But if inside of my house, I don't put any windows, you know, because I'm concentrating so hard on the door, then that's a pretty naive mistake. I didn't think I was supposed to be responsible for the windows, you know, and that's what unnerves me about it a little. Absolutely, it's going to be better to move things to the cloud. You'll have, you know, more flexibility around your costs. You're going to have more flexibility around all of the different kinds of software and technology and tools that you can use, even with AI and, you know, big data. But you need to appreciate and understand all of the ins and outs of that environment that you're managing. At the end of the day, it is the responsibility of the company to manage the permissions, where how the data is hosted, the accessibility, and that often slips through the net, the reality of how much of it does fall to the individual companies and sometimes to an individual in that company as well.
When you're dealing with enterprises that have moved to the cloud or public sector organizations that have moved to the cloud, do they now actually say, by doing our IT architecture that way, rather than building it on premises, we can be more secure? Is that part of the argument?
Yes, I think, because when you don't have a physical asset, it's almost easier to map these things out in theory. You know, you can sit down and you can do your architectural diagrams and you can flip switches on and off as is needed. But again, that makes perfect sense if the person or people implementing it are 100% sure that they understand every flip, every switch and flipped switch in that environment. But that's the challenge. If you have a physical environment that's in a physical office, you have, obviously, if it's connected to the internet, you're going to have certain things that you're going to want to put in place, but they're almost easier to imagine in a practical sense. You know, if you've got a cable, even your business, that's for your internet, then you're like, okay, where do I need to protect things from this? You can see it physically. Same as you'd have a door going into that room you need to lock. But when it comes to cloud environments, it's that kind of invisible protections that are harder to comprehend without full and comprehensive knowledge of what you're doing in those environments. And the reality is these days that many companies, yes, big companies do have teams and cybersecurity teams who are qualified and capable to do all of these things, put these measures in place, but thousands and thousands of companies don't. They have an individual or they have an IT team that's not as cybersecurity savvy, or they're currently trying to upskill their teams so that they are they are able to qualify any changes in those environments. And what a lot of companies are doing is they're relying on giving more than enough access to people in the environments out of fear that they don't give them enough to do their job. So like the biggest risk that we see in cloud environments is less so about the actual network and the structure and holes in that. Yes, they're going to be a challenge, but it's more so about the identity side of it and how to give permissions to people in the cloud. You'll give them permission to certain access to certain software, access to certain environments, but what else are you giving them permission to, and what else can they do with the permissions that you've given them? And if they don't have a full understanding of the knock-on effect of those kind of permissions, then that's a much bigger hole than necessarily network gaps or ports open, because people are much more, you know, targeted attacks are going to be much more likely to happen in relation to people stealing like people's identity or people access permissions as such, their passwords, than somebody trying to identify if specific ports are open.
But nonetheless, moving to the cloud is not risk-free, and there are security issues that surround any system. Is it possible to just summarise the main ones, other than the issues around identity, which we'll come onto in a moment? But what do you think are the main ones in your experience?
You can target in the same way that you would target traditional assets. Yes, you look at vulnerabilities, and obviously there's that risk window when you've got things like, you know, Patch Tuesday. A Patch Tuesday leaves a risk window open until people actually patch. You know, we're saying, here's vulnerabilities that can be exploited, and you'll always have those windows. That's Microsoft Patch Tuesday. You'll always have those windows where it's like, making an announcement to those that are attempting to attack companies and individuals and saying, here's your in, here's how you can get access to those environments, and here's how you can cause some damage. All of those vulnerabilities are, of course, going to be a risk. But I genuinely don't think that anything compares in the same way to the risk of identity. Now, if you can combine both of those things together, where you take something like a vulnerability like Conti and then you get password access, then that's where the fun really starts. So it's this the sweet spot of combining the two from somebody who is capable of doing that. And these days, more and more of those hackers, they're not qualified. I use my inverted comments. They're just poking around and seeing what they can do damage to. So yes, traditional vulnerabilities are still going to be a risk on those cloud assets in the same way that they would have been with physical assets. And we should be wary of those, and we should be patching all of those. But absolutely 100%, if you can prevent as many as possible by patching as much as possible and by limiting your identity access as much as possible, then you're going to be in the best place possible then. Whereas with traditional assets, there's much more risk with traditional vulnerabilities because you've got physical hardware that's generally not being managed in the same way. So in a cloud environment, some things can be automated. You can automate the creation of someone's a user and the environment they'll have access to. But in the same vein, you can also automate the completion or the closure of that user should they leave the company, should they be found to be exploited, a lot faster. You can trigger it based on certain events. You know, there's a lot of things that you can automate and do there that you can't do in a traditional environment.
So we have centralized management. We also have the economies of scale for security teams, because presumably a big cloud provider can afford to have a large security team. Otherwise, their business is at risk. But on the flip side of that, are we seeing threat actors starting to target the cloud and maybe some of the areas which are less well protected? So smaller providers, people who integrate clouds with other systems, people who set up links between different cloud providers, and we're seeing that with hybrid environments and multi-cloud environments. These are all areas of potential vulnerability. But what are you seeing from a threat intelligence perspective? Are they going after the cloud because ultimately that's where the data is now?
Yes, they're going after it. It's new and it's shiny, and that therefore anything that's new and shiny and people are starting to use more is going to, in its initial stages, be more vulnerable and easier to target for any of those threat actors there. So absolutely, yes, they're going to go after it from there. What we'll see is the education side of it, basically. When you've got smaller companies, people that don't know as much, let's say, or when you've got the combination of things. So you've got people that are using hybrid environments, or they're using a lot of integrations with third-party products, where often it's unclear as to where the responsibility lies for the security. Now, let me just say, if it's you and you're using that environment and it's your company, ultimately the responsibility lies with the company. But often people do think that because they're using a third party integration, that therefore all the security is the responsibility of the third party in that case. There's where you're going to leave gaps for those threat actors to just walk through in many cases. And because of the vastness and the speed at which cloud environments are being spun up or being used or being leaned on for business needs now, there is, of course, going to be even more gaps and that for those threat actors to access. So if anything that's moving as fast as cloud environments are, and as businesses are now moving to those cloud environments, is of course going to leave a trail of gaps and holes along the way, because we're trying to retrospectively fix these things. And there's a sentiment across the industry of people always reacting to attacks or reacting to mistakes being made, as opposed to trying to get ahead of it and prevent these things. Because what you'll find in a lot of businesses is that they'll say, we need this solution and we need it yesterday, or we need to move to this platform and we need it done ASAP, or we're making cost saving measures, so we need to change X, Y, and Z in an environment. And those environments will get changed so quickly that often in many cases there isn't true consideration taken for what preventative measures need to be made ahead of time. Whereas if you physically had to move your entire infrastructure from one office to another, you wouldn't just lift it up and move it and plug it in. You would spend some time mapping it out and thinking about what security measures you might put in place in that instance. But because of the speed at which everyone's businesses are moving, and it's not limited to any specific industry too, you could be talking about an individual person running a very small company of their own that's online, to massive companies that work in, I don't know, insurance and banking. They are going to have parts of it that are going to need to move quickly. And that's going to be the challenge in that case.
Well, that takes us back to this idea of the shared responsibility model. But quite often, organizations see it as a, I don't need to be responsible for this anymore model. And that is wrong, isn't it?
And I can see that. I mean, when you've got a lot of responsibility as a company with so much moving and so much changing, and in many cases, not the funding or the resources to manage it the way you might ideally like to, of course you're going to want to throw stuff over the fence and make it someone else's responsibility. But if we think of everything from a preventative viewpoint, and you assume, which people should at this point assume, that they are going to be hacked, what do we do when we're hacked? How do we respond to that? If you're always working off of that viewpoint and you say, okay, well, what happens if this third party software that I'm using, or our software, whatever it is that you're using, what happens when that is exploited? Then you're in a, as much as it's an uncomfortable thing to have to work through and uncomfortable decisions that have to be made, you're in a better position doing that, because you're always anticipating the worst case scenario. And that's the way things are moving now. Everything is moving so quickly. It's not possible to only work on what do we do if it goes wrong. And the reality is that when things go wrong, the impact, the cost of those things going wrong is going to be so much bigger than the cost of implementing a preventative measure where you could have, or anticipating this thing going wrong. And I'm finding personally, seeing at a lot of cybersecurity events and talking to a lot of people that are, you know, trying to implement best practices around cybersecurity, that's the switch in mentality that's happening now. So yes, when we look at things like the shared responsibility model, I can understand why people would want to push things off their desk. But if you stop for a minute and think about, okay, well, if I did push that off my desk and if it did go wrong, how will I look? Because at the end of the day, a lot of people only care about how they look, they as a company or they as an individual. But how would I look if that did go wrong? Would people accept that that was a fair decision to make, that I made it their responsibility, or I assumed that they were going to take responsibility for it? Or are they going to say, you should have done X, Y, and Z? And that's what I have seen. I'm happy to see it. It's been a while coming. I'm happy to see it. That mentality changing, where people are having to think about, how would I answer the question when we're exploited on that X, Y, and Z, you know, especially with the with third party stuff, there's so much of it being used. You know, how do I respond to that? And if you can say, okay, well, what I've put in place now, I'm happy to say that the response that I have is one I'm happy to stand by, then you're probably putting the best measures in place in that case. They may not necessarily be the most cost effective, or you'll have had difficulty pushing them through in some, you know, some companies, but it's the right decision to make in that instance.
And the cloud providers are clearly going to be very focused on securing their perimeter, because that's, again, securing their business. And they'll have business continuity and they'll have other measures in place. That's why, though, that we're seeing problems around identity in the cloud, because the one thing that the customer can get wrong very easily is who has access to those systems. And again, if we go back to that idea of the shared responsibility model, as you've just set out, if I fail to take a measure to protect my assets in the cloud for whatever reason, then that really is down to me and I'm responsible to my own board for that. Is that where you're seeing some of the risk, though, coalescing around that misconfiguration, lack of proper identity and credentials around cloud usage?
Absolutely. And I think the biggest challenge somebody has who's implementing the permissions within those cloud environments is that you're, as we say, caught between a rock and a hard place. You're being asked to set people up with permissions quickly, sometimes even to automate it, get it done, give them access. We need them to be working. And it's sometimes it's of, you know, it's about cost. As long as they're not working, we're not achieving the goals that we've set as a company. So you're under pressure to get these permissions rolled out quickly to individuals, where you may prefer to have the time to actually consider how much they actually need for the role that they're doing. And you can only template so many things in people's roles. If you think about the most out of the box company possible, where all roles are standardized, say even in government bodies, they're probably the best ways of doing it because roles are more typically more standardized. So therefore the things they need to access are more standardized, the level of permissions are more standardized. You're still going to have an exception in there somewhere where there's an individual who actually has a crossover where they're doing something else as part of the role and you need to give them permission for that. So how do you track that? How do you make sure, well, A, it's no problem giving it to them, but how do you make sure that should their role change further down the line that those permissions are taken away then after that? Or how do you make sure that you can conceive of the impact that that individual could have if their identity was stolen? How do you like visualize that? And then more importantly, how do you make those things make sense to your boards or the teams that are necessarily making the decisions about how quickly you roll out these projects? So it's kind of like a vicious circle and a very stressful place for the individual or teams to be in who are having to roll out all of these things. And I was at an event recently where I was listening to someone from Microsoft doing a presentation of their state of cybersecurity, I think it was called, from 2023. They were talking about there's been massive spikes on identity attacks since the beginning of 2023, right up into the middle of 2023. And that's as much as they were reporting on at the time. But they're seeing things like the more use of things like one-time password bots and more use of more of this MFA fatigue, where people are just pressing the buttons and putting things through because they're fed up of using all of that. And they're trying to identify what are the solutions to these things. It's not the same as traditional assets. You're logging onto your laptop at home. You probably have fingerprint identification on your laptop. Then grant, that's sorted. It's a physical thing. It's always going to want your fingerprint access. But if you're logging into all of these SaaS products and you are having to use MFA all of the time, and then you get a prompt to log in that may not be you, how do I identify the difference? You know, what do we need to do next? So it's moving so fast for the people that have to maintain those environments to be able to keep up with those changes. And I think that the best thing that they can do is use some sort of a tool that will help them to real time visualize the changes as they're happening and real time understand the impact of those changes while they happen. So if you worked in the same environment as me and I, for the length of a project, gave you access to a certain additional part of the environment, how do I know what else I may have accidentally given you access to? So if they're using tools that help them visualize it, it's much faster to do that than it is to try and network map it and break it down to everybody else in the team and do that on a person by person basis. But as well as that, if I want to make a decision where I want to give you more access because of a project I've been told that you're working on, and I need that decision, like I know in fintech companies now, they've got DORA regulation, and you know yourself that I know you've done some work on this before, and all of those decisions now have to go up to the boards and back down. How do I explain to the people who may not necessarily understand the technical side of it? So I think the more they can use tools that can actively tell them about these changes and the impact, either as soon as they hit the button to save the changes or before they hit the button, ideally, to save the changes, then that's the only and best way to do it. I do wonder if it's ever, because it's evolving so fast, if we're ever going to get to a point where somebody can always understand it without those additional tools. And I don't think that's going to be the case. I think, you know, we're going to need to have it in order to know what we're responsible for, what mistakes we've made, how to roll them back, and be able to, more importantly, to be able to explain them to the people who are making the decisions about the tools that we use as well.
But the other thing then is that this is an ongoing process. It's not something you can just do. You need that visibility because cloud evolves much more quickly. It's much more fluid. You have systems being spun up and then hopefully spun back down again. We know companies don't always do that. And actually, one of the security risks is leaving stuff up there and running that shouldn't be. But you know, it's not the same as the conventional on-premises 5 to 10 years plan where there's a system installed, it's documented, the disaster recovery, the access management, the security, the data governance is all built in at that project stage. You don't have someone running around with a credit card. I know it's a cliche, but setting up a SaaS application that suddenly sucks in data and perhaps dumps it onto an open online storage drive of some description. You know, I'm not going to use brands, but there are plenty out there, which again can be left by default very open. But you know, how do you do that as a security specialist? How do you advise the CISO and their team to have that visibility so they can actually say, oh, this is my security state right now, and this is my anticipated state in, say, 6 months' time at the end of this project?
Well, I have the added advantage, of course, that you know, the answer to that is that, that Tenable makes a solution that looks after that. We have an attack path management solution, and that works with the identity solution that we have. So what ultimately that means is that we link up our Active Directory or whatever we're using on the ID side of things, so that as and when those changes are made for individuals in the cloud environment and in the traditional environment, that we get notifications and we're able to see if we've, I want to say if we've made a mistake. I mean, the change may well have been intentional, but the appreciation for the impact of that change may not have been. So what we can do is give that visualization. You imagine like a spider graph where you'll see, you know, there's Stephen's laptop and here's the access he has. And I can track that access. I can click on your name and see all of the different devices that you could potentially have access to simply with your login. And then I can click on your device and see what kind of other softwares and tools that you would have access to because of the permissions you have on your device from there. And that kind of a tool, like for me as a techie implementing those things, I've managed AD for years before I ever came into Tenable. And the one I managed was about 15 years old before I even took it over. So the only real way of finding out what impact you would have by changing people's permissions was to remove them and wait for the phone to ring, which I wouldn't recommend anybody do ever. But it was so old and nobody ever changed anything. And it was unreal the amount of risk that was in it. But with something like the tool that we have with the attack path analysis, you can visualize it. So I can actually see this, how many clicks there are between somebody who has Stephen's logon details and somebody accessing something like our domain controller or our, you know, data sources, something pretty significant or even non-significant, but you can follow the whole thread through. And then we can combine those two things as well. So I'll take Stephen's permissions and I'll have a look and see hosts that have certain vulnerabilities on it and see how many hops away before that becomes an issue for the company. So if you think again, like I mentioned Conti earlier, where you take the combination of that vulnerability and someone having your password, you'll be able to visualize those kind of things. That makes it easy to demonstrate it to something like a board. If you're showing an actual visual diagram and saying, okay, here's Stephen and his laptop, and two clicks away is us having our entire domain controller exploited and all of the data and controls within it under the control of somebody external to our company. A visualization of something like that is just, it's priceless, and it's definitely a lot easier to get across to the board, because I appreciate, especially with something like DORA, you're not just talking to the technical person on the board, you're in front of everybody, and more importantly the ones that often decide the budget that you're going to have to protect the company. So they need to understand and appreciate it. And I often find as well, because I've had a bunch of these conversations with people at events over Dora recently, is having them appreciate from a personal perspective. So if I show them something like that and go, okay, well, if somebody accesses their domain controller and is now able to do X, Y, Z in the company that will impact you, it means that you cannot access your data, that you cannot do your job, that if it's in a medical industry that we cannot look after patients, if it's in an OT industry that we cannot provide services, whatever it is, you know, you'd be able to literally track the impact of it as soon as the change is made in the Active Directory service. That's what people need. It needs to be that quick. And it hasn't been prior to now, but with everything changing so fast in cloud environments, you need to know if you hit a wrong button, and like I say, even if you hit it intentionally and don't appreciate that it's wrong, because not everybody understands the level of cloud access that they need to, you need to know immediately the impact that that's going to have or could potentially have on the company if you're exploited.
So it seems to me you've got two layers here. You've got one, which is your reporting, your regulatory reporting. So DORA, other bits of legislation, I need to take this information to the board. They need a snapshot. But then at the same time, on an operational level, you need some sort of real-time alerting to tell you that something's changed in your production environment, particularly your cloud environment. So you can then look into that and drill down and say, all right, has what somebody's done, quite possibly with the best intentions, created a security hole somewhere else?
Absolutely. That's it. It sounds really simple. It's even simpler when you said it, but that's exactly it. And nobody wants to a highfalutin, as my dad would say, project. Like, we don't want it to be more complicated than it needs to be. I don't know of anybody that's managing a cloud environment that, you know, has plenty of time to do other things throughout the day. It's complex, it's difficult, it's stressful. One mistake can lead to a very significant impact to your customers and to your environment. So if you have something like this that's going to tell you straight away, then, you know, the amount of stress alone that it relieves, with also, you know, reducing the amount of potential impact then too, is absolutely worth it.
So then how do you tie all these elements together and give the CISO something that allows them to see a complete overview of their security posture and the risks, both at the on-premises and the cloud, and potentially other forms of technology that may be coming into play, such as the supply chain as well? I mean, is that even possible? It sounds like a good objective for the CISO to be aiming for, but I don't know whether we're there with the current generation of technology to have essentially a single dashboard that covers all of your applications and all of your architectures.
We are now. I mean, there's a lot of people that are working in the cybersecurity industry, and especially CISOs, will tell you that there's a lot of stress in tying lots and lots of different tools together. So they could have anything from 2 to 20 different tools that they're using. And then they have all that information these days, typically exported into something like Excel. And then they're building reports to try and make sense of it. And it takes a lot of time. What we've done at Tenable is we call it Tenable One. We're now a platform service. So it means that we can take all of the information from people, from everything. So we do vulnerability management, web application management, we do identity, we do operational technologies, we do cloud security, we do all of the different possible ones in a single platform. And we allow all of that data to be pulled into one platform for people to, so you can have your VM team poke around in their data, but for someone like, and your WAS team poke around in theirs, and same with cloud. But for someone like the CISO, they can have the overall view of everything and see what their actual entire exposure looks like. And then above that, what we do as well is what we call a Lumen exposure view, which allows a much more simple view. So if you're taking it again, like say to non-techies, say your CISO has taken it to the board, you can show how you're performing either within your own company. You can set things like, say, last month we were at this level, and because of the measures we put in place, we've now improved our processes, and we can demonstrate that with our individualized reporting. But you can also have a look versus different industries and see how you would rate with respect to, say, other people in the same industry, or just other people globally with their practices and the information that they pull in as well. So having that kind of overall view, I mean, everyone is competitive, and companies for sure are competitive. So to look at it and be able to compete within the company. So I've seen people take things like their Windows team and their Linux team and use the information that they've pulled in to see how quickly those teams are patching and getting the work that they're supposed to get done on the remediation side of it. But I've also seen companies take the information, have a look and say, okay, well, I want to go to my cyber insurance company and I want to be able to say to them that I've reduced my risk from, you know, we rate it out of 1,000, but and the lower the better, but from 800 down to 400. And I want to go and talk to my insurance company and get attempt to negotiate a reduction on my insurance because I've improved my practices in a measurable way. And then to boards as well that have a look at it and say, okay, well, we looked at all of these 6 months ago and everything was red or orange. And it's great to see that we've got everything down to green zones now, except maybe one. So we should probably allocate funding over there and see that we get those things looked after too. So it's about making all of that information useful for everybody and making sure that everybody's on the same page, because cyber exposure and cyber security is no longer just the responsibility of the tech that's implementing it. It's everybody's responsibility. It doesn't matter if you're working on reception or you're sweeping the floors or you're the CEO of the company. Everybody has some responsibility when it comes to the cybersecurity of the company that they're working in. And using a tool like that allows every single asset to be accounted for. So as little as maybe, well, 5 years ago, I know I would have been speaking to customers about their vulnerability management, and maybe they were looking at doing something like having a look at their web applications. These days now, people, the number one question they're asking is, what have I got? I actually have no idea of how many assets I have and how big my risk is, or how much of it is there. So they want to identify all their assets, and we do that too. But they can identify whether they're OT, IoT, whether it's mobile devices, whether it's traditional devices, cloud devices, absolutely everything can be identified. And then you start from there and build it all out, pull all your information in and bring it right up to digestible information that you could share with anybody you need to, so that everybody understands that you're doing a great job, a terrible job, how much risk you have, whatever the story is that you need to share to get everybody on board. That's what you can do with the platform that we have. So it's even useful if you were, you know, doing a company delivery and explaining to people that this is something we need to focus on as a company, and this is how we're performing, and then do your cybersecurity training following something like that.
So some form of benchmarking, whether that's internal or within an industry between companies, that could actually be quite a useful tool to highlight to organizations, you know, how they're doing in terms of both compliance and actually their absolute security. So do you think, just to conclude, that would actually help to expose any potential risks around the cloud?
Yes, absolutely. I think once people are competitive, once you start putting some benchmarking into it, they're naturally going to want to do better than they did before, and ideally better than the next person that's doing the same things. And when it comes to cloud, the best thing about the cloud side of it is that not only can you identify your risk really, really quickly, but because it's cloud, you can fix it really quickly as well. Like, you can get ahead of it. And what we aim to do is show people as many preventative measures as possible. So we'll take the intelligence and the data that we have. We have a massive data science team that actually works out of the same office that I do in Ireland. But what we do is we aim to say, okay, as of today, based on everything that you have today and in its current state, here's where you're most likely to be attacked next. We're trying to help people to understand, based on the kind of vulnerabilities that they have in their environment, the kind of permissions that they have in their environment, and the kind of different environments, like in this case, say for cloud, where they're most likely to be breached. So it's no longer just about saying, okay, this critical vulnerability, I need to look at this one first because it's a CVSS score of 10. That may not be the case. There could be one that's a CVSS score of 8 or 7, but when you combine it with the identity access that is on that device or an individual has for that device, and with other mixes of data from the other different areas, then maybe it's actually the one that's a CVSS score of 8 that you need to look at ahead of ones that are rated a 10. So we use our own AI and data lakes to be able to attempt to predict that and tell people where they're most likely to be exposed. So that means as well that if it's you, for example, that's doing it, and you come in and you've got 10,000 vulnerabilities or 40,000 or more, I've seen bigger numbers that need to be remediated or accesses that need to be approved or reviewed, that at least when you go in, instead of going, where do I start with all of this information, that you can go straight to this hit list that'll show you, okay, these are the ones you need to be focusing on today. And then every day we update it so that when you log in tomorrow, it could actually be a different thing that will point you to than we did today, based on what other findings you've had and what other assets have joined the systems and what other permissions you've changed. So in a cloud environment that's changing all the time, and like you say, when assets are being spun up, they could be spun up for minutes or hours, which happens, and they can be shut down just as quickly as they're spun up, depending on what people are using them for. This can change really dramatically, and certainly on a daily basis, this can change. So having all of that worked out for you, instead of having to sit down and work it out, which I have known people to do in the past, certainly gets you on the best start, certainly of a Monday morning when you come in to, you know, to be able to prevent as much as possible.
Sounds like the CISO's to-do list is never going to get any shorter. Jennifer Cox from Tenable, thank you very much.
Thanks, Stephen.
Jennifer Cox on why benchmarking against peers is a useful tool when it comes to improving security in the cloud, and why it's still critical to have a full picture of a business's technology landscape in the cloud or on local hardware. That, though, is all for this episode of Security Insights. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time when we discuss why paying out to ransomware gangs is often a bad idea, but why moves to ban the practice could make a bad situation worse. Until then, do catch up on past programmes on our website, securityinsights.co.uk, or subscribe and rate the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and Spotify. Thanks again for listening.